latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
All right, carry the four plus this. I got that. All right. 26,876. What's that? That's how many races you could have bet last summer on ExpressBet. Haven't signed up for an account yet? What are you waiting for? On top of all those races, ExpressBet's giving away 25 million XB rewards points with promotions at Saratoga, Del Mar, and more. Plus, ExpressBet's Fun in the Sun Handicapper Tournament features $120,000 in prizes, including seats to the 2020 Pegasus Betting Championship. I know, I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you here, but here's one more. 500. That's the sign-up bonus you could get when you sign up for ExpressBet. So let's recap. 26,000 races, $500 sign-up bonus, $120,000 handicapper tournament, and 25 million rewards points. Hey, this math just adds up. ExpressBet is your way to play this summer. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states. Open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Top of the hour, as I explained earlier and just now coming into this visit with Mike Mulligan, the opportunity to understand how horses came out of two-year-old in training sales onto the racetrack. And of course, some get some time away after the sale and then then go forward. Others jump right in, right from the sale, right from whatever it was, March, April, May, June, and go right on with it. And you can tell already, just 10 days into Saratoga, there's been some really difficult maiden horses to evaluate. And really one of the last tools and one of the last methods out there has been the two-year-old in training sale, and you'll hear like Andy Serling. Andy will say, this is a horse that was one of the top sellers, or went 10 flat, and you'll hear references, and you can look them up at the OBS site and at Phasig, and you can go and watch how the horses worked, but you only see a snippet. You really only see maybe at the most a furlong and a half. If a horse works a quarter, you see a little bit more. But you don't really see the gallop outs, and you don't know the conditions. You don't know how fast the track might have been. And, of course, you get windy conditions, particularly at Gulfstream. Well, Michael Mulligan has been distilling all the information. He's on hand at the sales. He's got a position in which he can evaluate every aspect. And he has put it in the last few years, last couple of years, into BetBestBreeze.com. And it's a package, first and foremost, for buyers, you know, for potential buyers of two-year-olds and training sale workers. But it's available for those of us that are going to be betting on the two-year-olds. And Michael joins us. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. We're in full swing at this point at Saratoga and Del Mar. And, of course, not just there, at Ellis and everywhere else that the two-year-old maiden groups are assembling. And that's a fair statement, right? This is like the last frontier when it comes to, you know, trying to evaluate young horses that are a little mysterious coming in. Some of these maiden races so far at the meet here anyway have been absolutely, you know, eye-crossing.
I agree with you 100%, Steve. And, you know, I've been in the thoroughbred business for 35 years. You know, back in the early 2000s, for a five-year period, I was leading buyer in the world at auctions based on yearlings purchased that went on to the races. You know, it was like Sheikh Mohammed and I. He spent $170 million and bought 23 stakes winners, and I spent $13 million on 217 horses and had 23 stakes winners. And right down the line, we competed at the top level of the game. And now I evaluate three-year-olds and put them on the website, and I thought it was the last frontier. I thought it was something that we have so many different methods of evaluating racehorses for wagering purposes or for betting purposes, and really everything that out there when it comes to a first-time starter, they have nothing to say. So I thought if we evaluated these horses and looked at them, obviously I'm a big believer in zero sales because I sold all my horses through zero sales over the years, and I believe that it's a huge advantage to have this information because, you know, two-year-olds that are going to start their first time out, we're going to use maybe their owner or the trainer or the jockey or possibly, you know, the sale price of the horse, the breeding. But, you know, we have the opportunity to evaluate everything they do in our work, and there's every opportunity for this horse to show his – there's no reason for that horse not to show his maximum potential at a breed show because how better the horse works, the higher the purchase price. And that's a very general statement, but it's very true. And so, like, for this year, for example, I know that we've had 110 starters, and we've had somewhere in the mid-30s that have won first time out, and those are horses that started their first race. And 10 of those horses, our horses paid 10-1 or better. You know, we've had some horses that have paid, you know, big numbers, 70, 80, 90. But, you know, I would say our average is probably, you know, coming in at 3 or 4 to 1. But we have some long shots that hit as well. And the way I score those horses is we use a numbering system with the lower score, the better. So I'll watch 3,000 horses breed through the course of a breeding season, of a breed show season from March through June. And I'll score those horses only the top 25 to 30% that I feel like have the best racing potential, and it kind of leans towards them having the ability to win first time out and being precocious. And so our lowest acceptable score is a 9, and then our best horse is a 1. So if I score the horse between 9 and 1, with 1 being the best, the lower the score, the better. Those horses go into a database that goes up on the website, and every day we go across all the entries from the United States and Canada, and we put that up on the website on the selection section so people can subscribe to our website and get that information. You know, and on a typical Saturday, for example, we might have 40 entries, and they'll be classified by first-time starters and then horses that we scored that have had at least one race, and then stake horses. So you'll be able to look at them, and they're listed, you know, by racetrack, by the race number, the horse's name, the number in the race, and our score. Now, we only put up the scored horses, and obviously we're only scoring 750, 800 out of the 3,000 that we see. But we feel like those horses are the best horses that we saw. And we have a lot of, you know, serious horses out there right now that came from the zero sales over the last couple of years. that are active now. So, you know, I'm real pleased with it, and it's starting to get, people are starting to understand that this is an excellent source to use in your wagering purposes to bet first-time starters and horses in general.
Talk about what hints are out there, because we've discussed at length, particularly, you know, when I spent the couple of days at OBS and when we're observing the sales and observing the breezes, and you know, to me it's very notable that you have horses that are going to breeze, you know, moderate times, and may not have pedigrees or, you know, a physical presence that is going to make them early fast types in March, April, May, and even in June. And so, you know, having, you know, some extra information about a horse that might have gone in, you know, 10 and 3, 10 and 4, or, you know, 22 and change for the quarter, you know, numbers that don't draw a lot of attention. What, you know, what kind of information are you looking for, or do you layer into this evaluation? Because those are the horses that are going to, you know, not be obvious to the public.
Well, I think that's very, very true in that sense. And I can give you a few examples, because there's horses that I remember exactly how they worked. And it's funny because, you know, all these scores, you have one of my breeze books from June, and it's very detailed. You know, we put every fraction of their gallop out time, whether they were on course, got off course, you know, bumped the rail, left the pole late, left the pole early, which hurt their total breeze time, etc. And I evaluate all those horses, wind conditions and everything, and I'm right there. So, you know, the wind condition can change from horse to horse to horse, and I'm going to use that in my overall evaluation of the horse. And so, like, for example, there's a horse out there running right now. He was a big two-year-old last year late. His name is Nick Go. He worked 10-2 at the Breeze Show. It was a big, striding, real good moving horse. He left the pole late and worked 10-2, and then he went out in 23:39, which is a pretty good gallop out time. So he was covering a lot of ground, and he looked like a racehorse to me. So I scored him a 5 on my work. So that puts him in the top 10% of the horses that I saw. You know, because basically it's 2% for one top, you know, and so on. And he went on and won the Breeders' Futurity in October at Keeneland at 71 and paid $142. And I'm quite confident that I was the only handicapper in the world that picked that horse in that race. He went on to run second in the Breeders' Cup against Bob Baffert's horse, and sort of, you know, proved himself to be a legitimate contender at that level. A few of our other horses that are big gun horses that are out there running now, obviously Matoli. Bill Hybro is a good friend of mine who's the owner. Steve Asmussen is a good friend of mine who's a trainer. I've selected horses or helped Bill select horses, and Bill's been involved in any of my operations for years and years. And Matoli was a horse that left the pole not fantastic and kind of angled out, if you will, or bolted out to the outside rail by the time he worked, and he worked galloped out on the outside rail. And so he didn't get, I gave him, I believe, a 5 or a 6. He didn't get the best score ever, but if he stayed down where he was supposed to, he probably would have been, you know, a horse that went 9-3 and went out in 19-4 or 20 flat, something like that. You know, and a lot of people saw it. It wasn't just me. It wasn't like, you know, everybody didn't see it, but Bill was smart enough to go back there, and I spoke to Bill about the horse, and he bought him for, I believe, $130,000, and now he's who he is. You know, some other horses would be Mucho Gusto, who just ran second in the Haskell, Conti Rose, who won the Philly version in Belmont, Harlan's Joy, who won the Belmont Derby, the $1 million race there over recently, Bella Fina, who's, I believe, had 3 grade 1 wins. Shamrock Rose, who won the Breeders' Cup Philly and Mayor Sprint. Midnight Bayou has had several grade 1 winners, had several grade 1 wins, and Wonder Gadget. And that's just a few of the horses, because We've won 157 stake races by horses that we selected and rated on the BetBestBreeds.com and recommended to buyers to buy. And those horses are, I believe it's 57 graded stakes and 13 grade one wins out of those horses. So our horses are performing at all levels of the game, and those horses are always not going to get that one score. But like I said, you know, Mixto, Minolfi, those horses that had reasons, they sure still got scored for me, but I knew enough about after I watched the horse work that they had more potential. But I couldn't score the horse against the horse that went 9-4, let's say, and went out, you know, 22-57 like Shang last year, you know, fastest horse at all in March that, you know, won at Keeneland first time out and then went overseas and won the big race over there. Those are the kind of horses that we're watching for and evaluating.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Baffert, and he has made, I've heard him comment about the difficulty to take OBS specifically and being able to understand or, you know, have a feel for the horses that are, you know, working over synthetic there and then how they're going to translate to dirt. And, you know, from an evaluation and a scoring standpoint, when we're looking for a horse that is going to be debuting, ideally, you know, you're looking at debuters and also, I suppose, you know, a little bit down the road, surface switchers, you know, horses maybe that debut on the dirt or maybe got rained off the turf and are debuting over a wet track and then are going to get on turf down the road. But what's your policy or your approach to the synthetic breezers and how that's supposed to translate when they, you know, when they run in the afternoon on dirt?
Well, I think that the synthetic surface is, you know, these are young horses we're talking about. And now we start in March, so we used to start in February. And, you know, I was a big believer when I was selling 3-year-olds to have a lot of foundation in my horses. You know, they would be in training. You know, if I bought those horses as yearlings in July, they'd start training in July. You know, we break and train them and so on through the course of the year. But I think that as an overall standpoint, it's just a tad bit softer surface and safer surface for these babies. But at the same time, I watch everything that happens. And so, you know, when I'm watching a horse work and I'm watching the horse come and he seems to not be doing it fairly effortlessly. And I think, oh, this horse is going to go 10-4. And they put up a 9-4 time because their stride and the way that they stretch across the ground allows them to look like they're going slower than they actually are. That horse usually gallops out extremely, extremely well, and that's a horse that has a lot of potential. And, you know, the big trainers, Baffert, a lot of the other big ones, Todd, Fletcher, you know, Steve Espy, all those guys, you know, pretty much they're going to buy the fastest horses that are there. And I think that the gallop out times, because, you know, once a horse works and then they're, if you will, coasting out, then the efficiency of how they're put together, their whole physical presence and their demeanor, it will allow them to cover more ground naturally because of the way of their athletic ability than if they're being asked. And, you know, that's what we use in an evaluation too. It's all the things that they do right or wrong during the breeze that allows us to sort of, you know, take that group of horses and score them. And certainly, you know, when I see horses that win grade one races that I scored a 5, you know, I look back and how that happened, but I understand why it did. And I understand why our first-time starters, you know, the ones, if you will, the best horses that I saw from a precocious standpoint, they have a lot higher win percentage than, you know, like my lower scores, the 4-3-2-1. They have a much higher win percentage first time out than the other horses do. But those other horses are just going to have just as much as a right later on in their career to be really good race horses, because you got to remember, at the 2-year-old business, the yearling consigners all went and evaluated all the yearlings in the marketplace and all over the place and put together horses that they felt would be good race horses, because if they don't succeed and have horses that they can sell for profits, then they're out of business. So they've already been through one culling process, if you will, and then I go and put them through a second culling process and pick that top 25 or 30% based on what I see on the racetrack. It has nothing to do with their physical presence, their confirmation, their betting, anything like that. You know, and I understand that racetrack pretty well because when I was selling horses, I was the first consigner to go 9-3, and I had several horses go 9-4 on that surface. So I understand that surface pretty well.
Yeah, and this is, you know, this is the challenge, and we've already noticed early in the meet, as I as kind of was referring to, that some of the things you count on the last couple of summers really has changed, and so you know, finding other methods, and really you only need one horse here or there, you know, particularly with these maidens, you know, Gullo on the first day, and there's, you know, there's been one every couple of days, that, and they don't even have to win, Michael. I mean, they can be second or third at big prices. I mean, there are going to be some steam horses that, you know, that are, you know, coming into these maiden races hot and probably have good workout notes already and are from top barns and, you know, big pedigrees. So, you know, even finding somebody to hook up with the obvious horses is a help. I mean, this has been one of those areas that has been whispered about, you know, using the 2-year-old Breeze shows as a way to, you know, have a little extra information. And yours is really the first thing that I saw that, you know, that's got a coherent approach on a daily basis. When did you make this transition, or at least make it available for players to use?
Well, I thought this would work from a wagering standpoint, from my experience in the overall thoroughbred market in racing. And I probably started in 2000, I did start, you know, sort of rating all the horses in 2016 and then kind of compared those ratings to their performances at the races. And I felt like, okay, this is working. You know, I've got, you know, pretty much 85% of the winners cornered, and I've got, you know, in the high 80s and 90% of the stake horses covered by evaluating this way. So we'll put a scoring system on it and go. And so 2017, we first started scoring horses, and then we had the betbestbreeds.com opened up in June of 2018, where those horses were available to the public in as simple as subscribing to it. And, you know, what you said is a very good point about our horses. You know, during the maiden races, sure, there's going to be some really strong, expensive, big barn horses that came out of 2-year-old sales or yearling sales or homebreds that, you know, deservedly so should see big prices. And, you know, we're going to have some horses that, you know, go off at even money or 8-5 or 2-1 or whatever the case may be, because, you know, they perform well, they sold well, they're by top sires and pedigrees and so on, and they're in the right barns. But we're also going to have horses that people don't really realize. And then, you know, if we're winning at, you know, something in the low to mid-30s rate with our horses that are in the upper score ranges, well, those horses, if we have other horses in the race, we're probably, most of the times when I evaluate it, our horses are in the top 3 or on the board, you know, 75% of the time that they run. And we've had races where there's handicappers that didn't really believe in us and they start doing it, and we'd have two horses in the race. They run 1-2 and have a, you know, $2 exacta pay $165. And they hit 5 other exactas in the next 10 days by using the 2 horses that were in the same race that we had scored. I remember, it was early in at Santa Anita, so it was probably in June of last year, we ended up with 3 horses in the same maiden race. And the horse I scored a 1, which was my best score, wasn't the favorite. He was like 4th choice. And he won, and then our other horses ran 2nd and 3rd. And the favorite didn't have as good a score for me, and the horse ran 3rd. That was the favorite. So we had the trifecta exactly. But if you use our horses along with other horses or use it as a handicapping tool like we're talking about, then you're going to have a lot of success if you put those horses in your boxes and so on with exotic wagers. You know, and I could say a quick example, when Justify won last year, the Derby, there was a horse that we had scored that ran 3rd and went off at like 80 or 90 to 1, and the horse then hadn't had such great form of recently like the prior 2 months, but was a nice horse in his own right. And he ran third, and, you know, to me, sure, it's easy to say that now, but, you know, I was a big fan of Justify going into that race, obviously. And, you know, the horse that ran third to him, I believe that Superfecta paid something like $88,000, you know, and you would have been able to wheel those two horses if you used our system and Justify, and probably had a pretty nice payday if that was the case. So, you know, it's not just for first-time winners. That's how we use it for comparison purposes. But you got to remember that very often, especially with first-time starters, we might have two horses in the same race or three horses even in the same race. Because a lot of these two-year-olds, they're ready to go early. So, you know, May, June, July, there's going to be, you know, in every venue, Saratoga, Belmont, wherever you are, Del Mar, there's a good shot there's going to be more than two horses in the same race. And we can't win both. We know both those horses can't win. So that's going to hurt our win percentage a little bit. But the horses are still there.
Now, it's just, it's everybody will figure out, you know, everybody figures out what to do with information and with, you know, any kind of provider, you know, whether it's figures, you know, we're big Thoroughgraph users. And so, you know, you get certain reads on patterns and, you know, on any portion of the statistics that, for instance, that Jerry offers with the trainer stats and sire stats. I mean, everybody, you know, once they wade into a program or, you know, anything that's providing the workout reports, if you're a user of reports, everybody interprets it their own way and figures out the best way to incorporate it into their own play. The key is just having access and, you know, being able to, you know, to have, get your hands on this kind of information, because, you know, there's just so few places left, Michael, that, you know, give players those edges that for years they had. I mean, you know, there were the guys that were, you know, they used to track, you know, exacta and double payouts. Well, now then, you know, that information, you know, suddenly was available to everybody, and you know, it's widely incorporated into computer programs. There were the shoe guys, the guys that would track shoe changes that were that would be armed by the paddock, and I remember those guys tracking, you know, shoes and watching for first time bends and you know, getting any kind of an edge you can, and this is certainly that kind of information. I should ask you about how much does this cost, actually. I haven't even discussed that.
Well, it's $149 a month. And right now, which will probably go down, we have a 30-day free trial period. So basically, you go on the website, you log it, you sign up, and so you can get to selections. You can see everything but selections. And the selections are, you get 30 days free. And if you decide to continue to do it, then it's $149 a month. And there's big discounts for six-month subscribers and for annual subscribers. I believe the annuals are at $9.99 a year. And so it gives you all that information. And like you said, you know, this is sort of inside information that the people that are in the thoroughbred business heavily and are at all the two-year-old sales and evaluating all those horses, that they have some knowledge of watching a few horses go. And, you know, it was probably in a small group of people that might be shared with their, you know, big clients that own a lot of race horses or some of their clients that, you know, wager a lot. But I felt like this was an opportunity for everybody, you know, the people that bet $1 billion a month on horse racing in the U.S.
Sure.
To have this information and use it to their advantage. You know, it's not the be-all, end-all by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, we've proven that it is, you know, we've had, since the beginning of time, since this was available, we've had way in excess of 1,000. It might be over 1,500 starters. And if you bet every one of them first time out, you would have a positive rate of return on your investment.
Nice.
And nobody else can do that in the world. There's no way that anybody can say with that kind of numbers that you can have a positive return on your investment with betting all those horses first time out. And nobody's got any information except for us, you know, that's available to the public betting community at this stage of the game.
I love it.
I buy 2 year olds for people, and you know, I bought several horses this year. I had two starters, both of them won first time out, and both of them went to either side of the big stake races in Saratoga opening week. And, you know, I've been in the thoroughbred business a long time, and it's really difficult to buy three-year-olds that are able to win first time out and then progress to the top level of racing their second start. And those horses, one of them, Memorable, cost $100,000, and Shippy cost $77,000. Now, Shippy's been resold to some other partners and so on and so forth to go to that race. And then my other client had no interest in selling Memorable. But, you know, I use this information to buy horses for my clients along with my the things that I've learned over the years. And, I remember Memorable, he paid like $11, you know, so we have those abilities to give people opportunities to bet for sure that will be profitable for them.
Nice. Bet Best Breeze, Michael Mulligan. I appreciate it. Visit the website, and everything you'd want to know is there, betbestbreeze.com. Michael, we're going to see you this summer up here. You coming up for the yearling sale?
Yes, sir. I'll be up there at Saratoga looking for those special racehorses as usual.
I love it. Best of luck.
I look forward to seeing you, Steve. Thank you.
Not at all. Michael Mulligan, very cool. Betbestbreeze.com. I was introduced to this when I was down at OBS, and it became obvious that, you know, it's a tool. It's one more thing to incorporate, right? It only takes one good hit to pay for itself. That's why I say that about Thoroughgraph too. It doesn't take too many. Let's take a break here. Tony Black is going to join us, and just about 15 into hour two, Tony rode the other day. Well, I guess we have to ask him what went wrong, because he wrapped up. You could see the horse that he bred, that his son owns, and I could see Tony kind of taking care of her, and we'll see what we learned. And, of course, we're just a couple of weeks from Tony coming up here as well. Back after this, Tony Black, Steve Haskin, Rich Yang, and more at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Look back on what you did. Hey, all got no kids. A new wave of explosive. As if there's something new, kid. With a patient performer. Get in the corner. We were just tuning you out. We are your
We're back at the races from Off of the Flame. Young and Unafraid. I suppose we could say about Tony Black, not so young and unafraid. Tony, we were watching the other day, and the little filly that you bred, the Smarty Jones, and looked like you wrapped up on her, from what I could see.
Listen, I rode fabulously, Steve. I left the gate with the speed, and I said, man, this is going just fine. She's showing the speed like she shows in the morning, which speed in the morning is great as long as it finishes. And I was coming to the head of stretch and coming just when she changed leads at the 316th pole, and I heard this sound. And I'll tell you what it sounded like. It was going cheep, 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 cheep. And I looked around. I don't see any birds on the racetrack, you know. There's no birds in front of me. And then all of a sudden I look, and she's going cheep, 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 cheep. And I think she was trying to tell me, you started me for 40, I better run for 10. She's saying she's cheaper, cheap. She was going cheaper, 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 cheap, 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 cheap. Now, if a horse is giving it right from the horse's mouth, you hear cheap, you better respond to that. Cheaper, brother, cheaper.
That's so good.
But, you know, that's horse racing. And when we talk about first-time starters, you know, they can show you some parts of their training regimen, and they can give you some hope. And you try to run them in a spot that protects them maybe the first time. But after that, get realistic. You know, when they don't show you a whole lot and there's not a lot of excuse during the running of the race, then you can reevaluate and you give them a spot that's easier and they can be competitive in. You know, first-time starters, like you were discussing, all the formulas that are out there, and I've just heard the tail end of the last couple of segments, and there's all kinds of formulas out there. You know what? There's people that tell me there's all kinds of formulas out there for the numbers lottery. You know? And the formulas really look great, and they really seem like they work when you hit a number, pick three, a pick four, pick five, or a pick six, or whatever number you hit. And that formula really looks great until the next time when it doesn't show you any productivity. Well, first-time starters in racing, who says it's got to be all that cerebral? You can watch them train. You can enjoy their efforts in the morning. They can give you some indication of what they're going to do. I think at the sales, that's the biggest joke. They get them geared up to go an eighth of a mile, 3/16 of a mile, quarter mile at the most. And these people bid high on these horses that go 10 and 2, 11 for an eighth of a mile, 10 and 2. This is something to really run. Well, what if he can't run much further than an eighth of a mile? He can't really run. You know, two-year-olds are a guessing game, and you can be as cerebral as you want to be. But basically, you know, maybe different things will indicate what they are, just like different things indicated what this filly was in the morning. And then I wound up sitting on her and riding her over there the other day. And I says, you know what? All the months of training, I found out more in a minute and 14 seconds than I did for the last 90 days of training.
Well said. Well said. I mean, they're also, you hear the morning glory portion as well, where you have a horse that out in the mornings working out and shows speed and shows the feels under you that there's something there, and then in the afternoon is intimidated by other horses and kind of freaks out and doesn't really have the same confidence when they're out amongst horses that they do when they're working alone in the morning.
Right, and you know, that's the nature of athletics and being an athlete. There's a thing called a natural athlete, whether it be human or animal. And a natural athlete has the physical ability, of course, but has the mental ability that matches that physical ability. When you have a horse or a human where anxiety eats them up during or prior to the competitive event, well, that's not a natural athlete because they have physical ability, but mentally doesn't match their physical ability. And anxiety is one of your greatest competitors, whether you're human or animal. And you see a horse that goes over there, and you know they give you the body indication and the mental indication that they're not comfortable. You know, and it might be a new experience, and maybe they'll outgrow that discomfort. You know, they go over there, they're twitching and shaking and breaking out. You know, they're bouncing and they're wasting energy, and the jock goes to get up on them like I did the other day, and she stands up on her hind legs and lunges forward, and you have to tell the groom, you know, caminando. You know, the Spanish guy rubs her, so I learned how to speak Spanish. I tell him, caminando, walk her off, you know, and then I finally get up on her. Well, anxiety is what this horse and other horses that are first-timers or second-timers indicate that the anxiety takes away from their overall performance. They're not using themselves efficiently and effectively when called on. Now, sometimes they outgrow that. They get comfortable with the racing experience, you know, and some of them don't outgrow it, but they still have ability to be competitive, and you try to, you know, soothe them and comfort them and train them to be relaxed. And, you know, there are certain types of medication and things, you know, supplements, vitamin supplements that will help them deal with anxiety. But anxiety is one of the athlete's human or animal biggest competitor. And it can take away from their performance, whether you're a human, I can't say, or an animal.
Well put, Tony. And when you put it in these terms, start folding in as well some of the physical issues. You may have a horse that ticks all the boxes on the fronts you just laid out and has got something that nags at them and is bothering them and is limiting their opportunity, you know, to be a top level performer or even, you know, just win at the level that's appropriate for them. And so that's one of the amazing things about this. I mean, you can have a horse that's got, you know, not a nick on them, and they're sound and, you know, all the parts move in the right order. And there's something about their makeup that holds them back in another way. And so, you know, this is where, you know, rider and trainer, this is where everybody works together, as well as, you know, the groom. You talk about the groom. There's plenty of grooms that fold into this by, you know, making a horse more comfortable, a horse that's nervous in the stall, that, you know, just doesn't like being cooped up and doesn't learn how to adjust to life at the racetrack. I mean, there is so many roadblocks to success. It's amazing as many of them do as well as they do.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's a highly physical, athletic event. And energy can be affected, as we stated, with anxiety. Anxiety can be caused because it's a mental issue or, like you said, a nagging physical ailment. Nothing that's catastrophic or going to cause breakdown, but you take them over there. Listen, Steve, if you've had times in your life, well, and I know I have, you know, you wake up in the morning, you did something the night before, the day before, worked outside or did something, your back hurts, your shoulder hurts, this hurts, that hurts. And you can't perform that day as well as you perform before the nagging ailment of the back or the shoulder or this or that or the other thing. But it wasn't something that called for medical treatment. You didn't go to the doctor. You took it easy for a few days. And, you know, you could identify the situation, but yeah, that this is what was causing you to have some physical discomfort. Well, you know what? These horses, none that I've ever had any experience with, were verbal. They're nonverbal. That's why vets are so much more important to the profession. Veterinary medical profession is so important to horse racing. The good vet can read the horse, what he's doing by watching him jog or watching him train, or, you know, where the horse can't say, man, you know, my right hock is bothering me. It doesn't show like when I'm walking, but as I train, and it causes me discomfort, or I got a muscle problem, especially young horses. You're talking about horses that are developing muscle, developing bone, they're really getting acclimated and introduced to the racing game, and they are developing. They can't always tell you, you know what, I got a sore shoulder, I got a sore hind muscle in my back or something. But that's why, you know what, vets probably have to be more tuned in than human medical MD doctors, you know, medical doctors, because their patients, vets' patients, can't say my back hurts, my foot hurts, you know, my knee hurts. So it's a tough business. But like you said, grooms can sometimes be so important because they see the horse that's nervous or the horse that has some anxiety, and they rub them every day, and they don't go in the stall and yank them around or pull them around. You know, they try to deal with them, treat them with, you know, some gentle, you know, movements and slow movements. And like we say at the barn, you know, easy, suave, you know, take it easy. We tell these guys, take it easy. This horse is a little nervous, suave. Same way when I get on their backs and you try to give them a good experience in the morning. And, you know, when this filly the other day, as you said, it looked like I, you know, let her get to the wire as comfortably as possible with I hit her a couple times, which I'm not a great stick rider anyway, and I love these GT360s that Ramon Dominguez has developed. You know, they've got the real, the popper is a long tubular popper with high-density foam. I love it. I think he's brought something really important to the game. But you hit him a couple times, the noise scares him, the touch maybe scares him, and then when you see there's no response, I can't stand seeing a jock coming down the stretch wailing on a horse that's done. You know, you're not doing the horse any good. You're giving him an uncomfortable experience for no avail. You know, it didn't help you be productive the next time this horse gets over there. The next time he gets over there, he might have some recollection of that bad experience through the lane. Bring them over there. Let them have a good experience. You know, you do the best you can do. If they were going to get beat 12 lengths, what's the difference if they got beat 8.5 lengths and finished up the racetrack? I mean, there's no difference. It doesn't benefit the betting public. It doesn't benefit the horse. And it doesn't benefit in any way the owner. And I feel for owners because the money they put into this business at times is phenomenal. And it's a great business, and when things are going great, it is no better business for an owner. But there's also been owners that were multimillionaires that came into this business that left millionaires. You know what I mean?
For sure. No, of course. you bet.
It's a tough business.
Well, and it's a tough business because for people to come into it, from outside endeavors, and we've said this a million times, the people that are successful doing industry A, they assume that their success and their savvy in that arena is going to translate to this arena. And there's a degree of luck in this and random factors that make it impossible to predict. There's vagaries that just are completely random, and you know, then you deal with, you know, certain financial motivations in other areas that you know, over the years have been a very negative influence and have hurt the industry,
right?
You know, that and have chased potential owners that, you know, that would have been wonderful had they, you know, had they stuck it out, whether they got unlucky or whether they were taken advantage of. I mean, that's a part that isn't discussed really as much as it probably should be. But the bottom line is you can't, your success in one industry can't assure success in this business.
No, you're absolutely right. This is unpredictable at times. But you know what I like about the business, and you see more and more of it, to get people to get their feet wet and to learn the business? These limited partnerships are really a good deal for someone. And I've had some of my friends or people that like the horse racing game say, how could I get into the business? Where should I look to get into the business? Well, research the limited partnerships. There's a bunch of them out there. You know, there's sometimes it's a one-time expense with no monthly expenses.
Right.
And, you know, and you can get your feet wet. And you get the same perks as a guy who spent hundreds of thousands at the sale last month, you know, and brought some horses to the arena. You can go to the horseman's lounge. You can meet other horsemen. You can evaluate other horsemen. You can evaluate horses. You can learn the business without spending thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yep.
And you get an education for a nominal fee. And that's how you get into the business. And then if you want to spread out and you got your fee wet and you learned who's who,
yep,
and then you go from there. Right, Steve?
No, I agree. And we've seen it, you know, in the thing that we've done with DT, where we started as one of those introductories where you paid $500 and no expenses. And that was, you know, thanks to the generosity of Chuck Simon and Gary
right.
Siaka. And there's been countless people out of that have gone on and then got into bigger things and also went out on their own. And I'm very proud of that. I mean, that's... You know, that's been one of the most satisfying parts of my involvement with the show and you know, with the game at all, is how many people have been introduced to the sport that way and, you know, have had, you know, I think largely successful experiences. None better than our friend Ed Kelly. I mean, Ed came in on our first couple of horses and then ended up later at West Point and was in on Always Dreaming. So he got in on a Derby winner.
Can't beat that.
He's the poster owner.
And then you get into it and you get the chance to talk to guys like you and of course the experts like me. And
absolutely.
I thought, what better perk could you have to be able to talk to you and me and not have to turn your radio on? You can come visit us in the Horseman's Lounge. But I'm looking forward to getting up there in another week because of My Juliet's induction into the Hall of Fame. And I just keep thinking, once again, My Juliet's letting me ride in on her back to an event that is based on her experience, her ability, and she's letting me come along for the ride. Now, wasn't she a gracious and champion, My Juliet? And I just can't wait to get up there for the Hall of Fame induction and say a few words about her, because I love that filly. And I had so much success on fillies in my career. You know, the only fillies I didn't have any success on were the ones I married.
I knew that that's where you were going to end up. That there was no way to stop you from tying this into the multiple ex-Mrs. Blacks.
Yeah, you know, you got to bring it all together, you know. And you know, I have no problem with being truthful and realistic with my life out there. You know, it's out there for everybody to look at and to be accurate. They can say you're shameful, but they can't say I'm dishonest. I let everybody know my strengths and my weaknesses, and there was a bunch of weaknesses there over the years.
Tony, I can't wait to get you up here. And you said there's another mount coming up. You're going to ride before we see you?
No, in fact, I was trying to get the race went up at Saratoga, and it's for Saturday. But I had a shot of riding this filly if they were just trying to get an allowance race to go for her first start after a year at Parks. But the race went at Saratoga. It's Collegeville Girl. She's in
right.
on the Saturday. So, you know, I wasn't having given the opportunity to even come up there, but I wasn't coming up there to 27th and have to come back to first. But I'm just rooting for her to run real well up there on Saturday. Richie's probably listening now and probably saying, shut up, Black. You have too much to say about my horses. But no, I like that filly as an individual. You know, she takes it over there in the afternoon the same way she trains in the morning. And she's trained good. And I'm going to be watching her on TV, TVG, I guess, on the 27th.
Well, and she's in the sixth race on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, I'm rooting for her. I'm rooting for her. And I told Richie, I said, man, they're going to think you're a New York trainer when you get out of there on Saturday. And then he even had a two-year-old in on today, but I didn't get in, I don't think, which is Cogsville Girl's sister.
Oh, cool.
But isn't there a two-year-old race? Is it a two-year-old race today or tomorrow? New York grads. I think it's today.
State bred maidens today.
Yeah,
goes
today,
as goes as the seventh.
Yeah, she was on the.
She didn't get in. She was on. She was an AE. A
lot of New York breds. But I guess those people are breeding these New York bred horses because the money's there and the breed has certainly elevated its level of performance. You can't knock the New York breds and the money you run for. PA breds, you know, they do all right, but there's been some years that there's been very few of them. So we got to really root for the New York breds.
Well, the race that that Collegeville, I just pulled it up, and she's in a little tough in here. This is a serious bunch, including the there's the Joe Applebaum homebred, Flashpack and Barbie. And she looks very good. If she runs back to that debut where she won off by eight at Aqueduct in April,
right.
We'll have to see about her works. But Flashpack and Barbie looks to be probably your morning line favorite in that race. And Collegeville, drawn a little outside, going three quarters. And she ends up, let's see, she ends up in the 12 hole and gets Manny Franco. So, from a rider standpoint,
you go on there. You don't have to win, but you root for them to run well. That's what you root for. You know, you root for them to, and if you're betting the gimmicks, throw her in there with some of them.
Well, I think anybody, Tony, that cashed with us last year with her, you know, when she paid $20 last year in her debut, they're going to remember. And her form, or, you know, she's going to be a little dirtied up just because she's been away so long. And the reality is that, you know, with a year of maturity, she probably is a lot better than, you know, than what she's going to look like on paper. So, yeah, you're right.
Well, you take it from the exercise boy, Tony Black, the exercise boy. You take it from the exercise boy, Tony Black. She's not going to embarrass anybody. They don't have to win, but I think she'll put in a credible performance. And I'm rooting for her because she is one sweetheart to get on in the morning, and she responds so positively to everything you request of her. So what else you want in the race? Or you want them to respond to you and as much as you like them, they want you to like you. And I think this filly likes me, Richie. I mean, tell Richie that, Steve. I think this filly likes me, I tell Richie. But we'll see what happens. I think we'll get a good positive performance from her.
Tony Black, everybody. And Tony will recap and start to edge toward the Hall of Fame induction when we talk to you next week.
All right. Looking forward to it. Take care. Keep up the good work. Thanks. Bye.
Tony Black, folks. There's a informative session. Let's take a break. 15 to the top of the hour, waiting to talk to Steve Haskin and get his reaction to Maximum Security's win and what we have on paper for Saturday, the Jim Dandy. We'll start looking at that with Haskin, as promised, as well as the Curlin tomorrow. But I told you about that Jim Dandy and the six-pack, Laughing Fox on the Rail, Tax, Mijos, Global Campaign, Tacitus, and War of Will. And it's going to be a war of sophomores. This is a really nicely matched group. And pace-wise, I think we got to figure that out. And I'm wondering if Global Campaign does not have perhaps a little bit of an edge pace-wise. Tax, of course, can go forward. That's the one part of this that is a little murky is where the speed's going to necessarily come from. I think it's got to be Global Campaign and Luis Saez, who rocks him to sleep out there on the front end. Back after this, Steve Haskin joins us, and later, Rich Eng.